Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. This is Stephanie Sison here with Jerome Ossentowski. Happy September, happy fall to all of those out there, our great listeners in Colorado and beyond. Today we have a special treat. I am up at Jerome's beautiful forest garden and greenhouses here in Basalt, and we are sitting in the Tropical Greenhouse Phoenix to do our show to talk about fall gardening. But before we get into what's going on in our outside gardens, Jerome, I just wanted to help set the stage for our listeners of what we're seeing right now in this beautiful indoor space that you've created.
Well, we're sitting here in the patio, right in the central part of the greenhouse, and just above you, there are a dozen large pomegranates hanging down. They're not quite ripe yet, and just behind the climate battery, there are some jujubes that we were eating earlier.
Oh, they were delicious.
Kind of tucked into the oranges that will be ready in about a month. The oranges are about 2 months earlier this year than they were last year. And that variety of orange is a navel Washingtonian, and it can stay on the tree for 2 or 3, 4 months. So you don't have to pick the oranges. You just get one or two a day for 5 months. And next to that is the kumquats, and they're coming on pretty strong again. So we have about 4 months of kumquats. Across the aisle where the worm farm is, where we harvest worm castings every 3 or 4 months, is two papayas. We have papayas every day if we want on one of them, and then there's the red lady is just coming on again. That's just on the east side of the greenhouse. And then we have this beautiful cactus area right in the center here.
Oh my gosh, these dragon fruit flowers are unbelievable.
It's about 10 inches in diameter, and that's just on a potted one. We have a huge dragon fruit on the west end of the greenhouse that flowered earlier, and it'll continue to flower. We have some huge cactus fruit on the Nepalis, and then we have all our other different kinds of cactuses here and some new citrus. And then we have a new plant that we haven't tried. It's a Cyrenon cherry, a Brazilian cherry, and it has maybe 200 or 300 fruit on it this time. It's fruited before, but not so prolifically. And it's a really nice understory, mid-story forest garden tree. You had one this morning.
I did, and I saved the seeds for heading down to Puerto Rico. I think I want
to
plant it.
Is stick them in a pot, and you can grow another one. I've been just putting them in the vacant beds, and then I can pull them out and pot them up and sell them or whatever. And then next to that, we have the Lucayena with the lab growing up. And that'll get coppice this weekend, because I have a dozen high school students coming to take over Crimby for a day and a half. And so they'll get to experience chop and drop in temperate climate zones, but in a tropical greenhouse. This is something you would do in Costa Rica or in Puerto Rico using Lucayena and lab. And now, a few years ago, we had passion fruit over this canopy here where the pergola is to shade out all of the flagstone. Now we have lab up there. One time we had lima beans, but it changes from year to year. And actually, I've cantilevered over the pomegranate, so it takes over half of the pergola and it shades it out. So this space is very cool in here. In fact, I don't use any. I have one fan all summer long that's right here. I don't use the regular circulation fans or the climate battery to cool the greenhouse. I just have vents on the south and on the north, and the canopy. The tropical canopy absorbs all of the solar energy, and it stays cool in the greenhouse. So that's the beauty of passive solar energy. The thermal mass cools it in the summer, and in the winter, all of this is deciduous, and the sun angle is much lower. It comes in and hits all of this thermal mass, hits the gabion wall, and it just reverses that and becomes a heat sink. And this is what the Anasazis did when they stumbled onto the caves, right? They thought, oh, this must be a good place to live. In the wintertime, the sun comes in low, and her hands on the flagstone, red sandstone, and it's nice and warm. And in the summertime, sun is high, and all that area is shaded, and it's nice and cool. So that's the same principle that we have, you know, have here. And I have new plants. I took the bananas out. I have cherimoya that will be fruiting, two new guavas, four new citruses. I have mandarin, pink grapefruit, and two new limes. So I'm kind of focusing on a new crop of citrus rather than the bananas, because they're most of the citrus comes in the wintertime when you don't have fruit outside. Mm. So it's really nice to have oranges. Like the lime tree lived for about 9 years, and we had limes every day for 9 years. They were always fruiting. And that's kind of what citrus do. They'll fruit for a long, long time. And then we have a lot of moringa we introduced. That's a miracle food. We have all of our salad greens interspersed in as understory. We have kale. This is in the forest garden. And wing beans, a new tropical bean. And then in the south bed, we have all of our salad greens and kale and stuff for the winter. So we'll have lots of, right now we have basil in there and stuff like that. And that's just our tropical greenhouse. We have five greenhouses. The other ones are more in temperate, cucumbers and tomatoes and stuff like that will just be until the frost. And we're picking just tons of cucumbers.
Excellent. And so, Jerome, I know a lot of our listeners already know who you are and all about what you're doing up here. But if someone is tuning in for the first time and they want to come for a tour or something like that, can you go ahead and throw out the website and your phone number? And are you accepting tours this fall to see this? Because I bet a lot of folks who are watching the leaves turn out there in Colorado would love to come sit under a papaya tree.
Yes, we just did two tours last week. People come from Arizona, from the Front Range, and now with the new interest in growing your own food during COVID, people are starting to look at greenhouses as an alternative for food security, and also just backyard gardens and forest gardens. So we're encouraging people to do a tour. The fees are on our website. It's crmpi.org. Or you can email us at jerome@crmpi.org, or you can call us at 927-4158 or 456-3480. And this is a great time to go around outside as well to pick plums and apples. We're trying to stay ahead of the bear and get all the apples before the bear knocks the tree down or destroys it. And we did pick about a half a dozen apple trees completely, and we have several nice plums that are full of plums or partially full of plums. We didn't have a bumper crop of fruit this year, but with 150 varieties outside, it doesn't matter if you only have 20% or 30% a success on your forest garden, because you're still going to have a bumper crop, and we still have the freezer full from last year. So this is food security and resilience that permaculture systems built in.
Well, that's resilience through so many things, but certainly that biodiversity you spoke of. If we have only apples and it's a bad apple year, we're out of food.
Exactly. And if it's peaches, you get frosted. And, we didn't get mulberries for the first time in 7 years. But, next year we'll get them. We got raspberries, and we just got a huge bumper crop of those blonde raspberries that we use the humanure on. So we have a composting toilet, and we don't use the compost that's about 2 years old when it's ready to be used. It basically looks like worm castings. And we only put it on a certain area of the forest garden, which is separate from all of our vegetables. And it happened to get onto the raspberries, and they're loving it. And so we're going to have a bumper crop of blonde raspberries.
And if that is a new term for anyone listening out there, the term humanure, as Jerome just spoke, there's a great book called The Humanure Handbook if you are curious and you want to learn more about that. What else was a big producer in the outside gardens for you this year?
Well, I remember when I called over and asked if you would pick give us some leftover salad green starts from, you know, sustainable settings, or, and you happen to bring over, you happen to bring over some from Casey's, and they were rejects from him. I think he was just going through his odds and ends, and you put them together here, and we got some amazing cucumbers that we revived. They looked like they were going to die. I put them in 4-inch pots, and I am picking 18-inch cucumbers.
My goodness!
You know, baskets full in 4 different greenhouses, and we also got celery and all the stuff that we put outside in new beds. And we, you know, it's amazing what you can do when you just recycle plants. And that's what a lot of farmers should do, is, you know, if instead of throwing them away, give them to somebody so they can put them in their garden. And we had not as great a success with our annual seedling production this year. You know, we're not annual gardeners here. We're perennial gardeners. And if I have new volunteers in and they've never planted things, sometimes they don't come up. And, you know, if you miss a couple of germinations, then you don't have. So it's always nice to have some free plants coming in, and you can revive them and put them out there. I'll take those plants that are in there, like the chard and the kale, that are in the outdoor garden. I'll transplant them into my indoor garden in the tropical greenhouse in the south bed, and they could live there for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I remember you used to have kale growing for 5 years in some of your red butte greenhouse.
They're 15 feet tall.
Yeah, I have two of those kale plants that I'm nurturing right here in the dinosaur kale. I'm doing that too.
Yeah, and I think two things there. One, thanks to Casey up at Wild Mountain Seeds for those plant starts. He also donated some to the Basalt Food Park. We put some down there. And then also just a reminder, even coming from the expert Jerome, some years some things do great and some years something always doesn't do great. And that's the beauty and the challenge and the interest of growing your own food.
And
it's magic.
Not only just annuals that don't do well, your perennial garden can have big swings in production and non-production because of a particular frost or a bad pollinating year. If you have a wet, cool spring and there's a short window for when the pollinators can actually pollinate an apple or a plum tree, and if it's cold and wet for 3 or 4 or 5 days, your production on that tree is going to go down substantially. And that didn't happen this year, but something else happened. We don't know exactly. You know, we have this weather, crazy weather, and it wasn't really hard frost, but it was something. And the mulberries. Maybe the mulberries just decided to take a year off.
Yeah, maybe they just needed a break.
Yeah, you do. And you know, most full-size apple trees take a year off. Almost all full-size standard apple trees do not fruit every year for that reason. You know, they go south. They, you know, they take a year off. They put energy into their
roots.
Their roots or their branches. And these trees are going to live to be 150 years old or 120 years old. And they don't need to fruit every year. Because I have 20 apple trees. And if I get 5 of them to fruit, that's enough. Michael has 1 apple tree and he gets all the apples he needs. He has 1 apricot tree. He gets all the apricots he needs. So we don't need to have, you know, 20. But that's, and we got, you know, over our head, so we can't stop. I keep, you know, I want the whole candy store, and I want all the different flavors. And, you know, that's the fun part about experimenting with new things, like the Brazilian cherry. Now I'm working on pawpaw, and I've got some new pawpaw seedlings, and I have 5 grafted pawpaws, and I'm keeping them in the greenhouse for a year or two, because every time I put them outside, they die. And they should grow here in an understory. But I've learned enough that I don't want to spend, every time I kill a pawpaw, it's about $50. Or, you know, I'd lose. So I'm nurturing these pawpaws. And out of 150 seeds, I get 5, 6 to germinate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always an easy thing to get these things. But
it's
those
like
are
a
the
puzzle.
Challenges.
It's a little puzzle.
It's a puzzle in how it all plays out. I'm still trying to crack the nut on jujube pollination.
So tell us, what is a jujube? Because I'm sure lots of people have never eaten that.
It's a Chinese date, and it's considered a medicinal Chinese herb.
Do they eat for the fruit or the leaves or the fruit?
And you can buy the dried jujubes in markets and in health food stores. And we're eating them fresh. We had them. Once they turn a little bit brown, they taste like a sweet apple.
It's delicious.
And they're good for a lot of immune system building. And they help to stabilize your system all overall. And, you know, if you eat a half a dozen a day for a month, that's a big improvement on your health.
Absolutely.
And then we have a friend who has two mature jujube trees outdoors in Paonia.
Wow.
Bernadette and her husband. And they have this amazing jujube harvest. And somebody put them in before they bought the property. So they actually grow in Paonia. They should grow here outside. But it's a very fragile first few years to get them started.
Mm-hmm.
But so we should be experimenting, like in Paonia and Hotchkiss, and getting grafted jujube trees to stabilize, to you know, get established on your property would be just a gold mine. Because not only are you eating, you know, medicines, you're eating delicious fruit.
Mm.
Just like the sweet hawthorn. I'm eating those right now.
Oh, they're so delicious.
Trees. They're heart medicine, right?
Absolutely.
We tincture them, but they're like candy. They're huge rosehip type fruit. They're in the apple family. They're so sweet. And so I'm out there eating dozens of them every day, and I'm going to pick a gallon to tincture. And I noticed that you can actually take that tincture, put it over rocks, and actually drink it like a brandy. I can't I can't do that per se, because
right.
I don't drink. But if somebody wanted to, instead of taking, you could have like a little brandy of glass of brandy over the rocks with hawthorn tincture.
Well, oftentimes, so I make a lot of bitters, and a lot of our listeners might be familiar with bitters from their bar, from their cocktail bar, Swedish bitters. They've got them behind the bar, and we add them to cocktails, and you can make your own. I make my own all the time. And then if I do go to the pub to get a gin and tonic, I don't like the tonic that most bars have because it's that high fructose corn syrup gross stuff. And so I get a gin and soda, and then I put my bitters tincture in it, and I make my own little health cocktail.
Right.
So then it's, you know, it's a cocktail, but it's also a health drink, I like to tell myself.
You know, all those in Chinese medicine, you have bitters, you have sour, you have sweet, pungent. All those things are part of the ecosystem in your diet and in your palate. You should be. I've stumbled onto a new sorrel. I went to Strictly Medicinal and ordered a bunch of new things this year. And I've always been. I have two French sorrel plants in my greenhouse for like 10 years now. And I eat sorrel every day in my salad, just two or three leaves. I found this garden soil that just is amazing. It's more prolific. It's more, it has, you know, a 6-inch broad leaf.
Oh, wow.
And it grows much more robust than the French sorrel. I tried, the French sorrel is really, really fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really taste that much different. So, I would recommend you getting, we'll be selling it next year in our nursery. Perennial vegetables are really important. Sorrel, horseradish, chives, garlic chives.
Asparagus.
We have wing beans. We have moringa, which is a perennial vegetable because you can eat the pod. You can also use the leaves as a miracle powder or
tea. Yeah, it's a superfood for sure.
And jujube leaves, there's, and nettles, those are all perennial vegetables. And you can dry them, you can make pesto out of nettles. And we have this lamb's quarters that we've been brought in from Calgary that has a 6-inch leaf. We've been growing that and even selling it at Mana Foods. You know, we've been selling, you know, packets of that, you know, all spring long with nettles, and now we are harvesting all the seed from that.
Well, I really like where this conversation has gone, because as we enter into fall and we're thinking about our gardens and things like that, we also need to be thinking about our health. And from a health standpoint, you know, yes, our vegetables, our lettuce and broccoli and things like that are certainly valuable and good for us. But a lot of these perennial herbs, these more wild herbs, nettle, lamb's quarter, their nutritional load is so far superior than our cultivated baby spring mix lettuce that we are used to getting in the store or even at the farmer's market. And so we need to be thinking about our highest health and our highest nutrient density. And at that same time, we're talking about plants that if we give them what they need, they become perennials and produce year after year after year. And they're so much more efficient in production and easier for us to grow than a lot of these annual vegetables. Plus, they're better for us.
And, you know, you don't have to stuff, you know, 2 pounds of kale down your throat. You know, you take a sprig of this, a sprig of that, and you never, I can put 20 different things in my salad, you know, when they're in season.
And that's why you're so spry.
Yeah. And, you know, I just love it. You know, right now I'm eating cucumbers and tomatoes and sorrel and celery that I got from Casey. And, you know, maybe a half a dozen, maybe a little bit of pepper and some parsley, okay, and some garlic chives. So you just go around and you just keep, you know, grab a sprig here, this, and you get that diversity in your salad greens. And there's a law in biodynamic. It's called the law of a little bit. And, you know, it's like we think we have to eat, you know, 2 pounds of kale and stuff it down our throat, which you can't even digest unless it's cooked. You know, one or two kale leaves, okay. But all of these things have enzymes and special medicinal qualities like chives and, you know, even cut up a little bit of garlic and put it in there, a little saute in your salad dressing, and it'll be more digestible. So you can get all of this stuff, you know, sort of a bouquet in your salad, and most of it's going to be perennial. You know, don't even plant it. We had this lettuce that was, I stumbled onto it this year. It was a cross between a bib and a romaine. It was kind of like a red romaine, a rouge de vivre, but it stayed in the hot greenhouse for 2 months, and it got to be almost a pound. And we harvested for 3 months during the spring and summer. And I'm saving the seeds on that. And it is actually an heirloom. I found it in the seed company. I don't know the name offhand. But again, there are lettuces that aren't fragile that you can grow. It's almost like a perennial. And you get them started. Our greenhouses are full of lettuces and kales and cilantro and parsley and all kinds of stuff in the spring.
And a lot of those seed themselves around.
They do.
So you
and
get
then,
those volunteers.
And then you move into your heat-loving things. And then you go right on into the frost, and then you can move some of that into your tropical greenhouse, and you can continue to eat all of that stuff. I can get fennel all summer long and all winter long. I can get lemongrass. I can get all of these things that, you know, you can grow them in a pot too. And but we should probably get back to what can people do to prepare for their winter garden right now. And I think that if you want to do perennials, we have a lot of nursery plants, grapes, currants, gooseberries, rootstock in our nursery right now.
This is my favorite time to plant perennials.
Exactly.
Is the fall. People think spring is when you plant, but no. Fall is the best time to plant perennials.
You can't get in the ground when it's wet, we have a wet year. And right now, if you put in a perennial from a 1 gallon or a 5 gallon pot, it still has time to set some root growth, and then it's going to be really ready to come up in the spring on its own, and it won't have to start all over again. It has this kind of transition time, this Indian summer to really get established. Then it goes into dormancy. And so we're going to be doing a little pop-up at the at Mana Foods and selling grapes. We have 150 grapes that we propagated from our different varieties.
When is that pop-up plant sale?
Probably in the next week or two, yeah.
Okay, so stay tuned to Mana News, and we put it on the Crimpy website.
Yeah, and we'll put it on some other. I think Natalie will probably blast it through the community somehow.
Excellent. And so we are running out of time already. So Jerome, Is it your birthday?
Yeah, tomorrow's my birthday. I'm 79.
79.
Yeah, and I'm amazing how much energy I have.
You are the picture of health, and no doubt it is in part to that those million plants you just rattled off that you're eating every day.
Well, you know, the thing is that not only eating the plants is that we're experiencing biophilia right here. We've created this amazing food forest that is really similar to what you'd find in a tropical food forest or a temperate food forest. And you're taking that energy in, and it feeds you not only in your stomach, but in your psyche.
Well, Jerome, this is so exciting to be up here. I always love visiting you, and I think our listeners should reach out and get a tour or get some of your plants and put them in the ground. Happy birthday, and we will see you next time on the Living Permaculture Show.
Well, thanks for coming up, Stephanie.
For sure. Thanks for listening to KDNK.